Okie dokie. Well, welcome everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for 44 plus years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and we tell each other about technology. We learn from each other. We teach each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you all for coming back here this Sunday night at 8 p.m. My All-Star link, it doesn't seem to be working quite right. Ordinarily, if I had the time, I'd reboot the whole computer, but don't really have the time. So we're going RF, and I hope people can hear my signal. Sometimes that works with the repeater, sometimes that doesn't. Let me pause for a second, and I will return and give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions or if you have a technical expertise in a subject that has come into the news and you'd like to share it, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, or if you have something NASA space-related and you'd like me to make Paul aware of it, of course, you can contact Paul directly. He has an email address at spacenetreport@gmail.com. But again, if you want to contact me, you can just send it to mailbag@ac2gs.com, and I will get it. Also, every week I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles and or YouTubes, put it together in a link page, and those are available. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the link page. It's open 24/7. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it ain't. You can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We also offer a internet audio stream of the Technical Net, and I leave it open the rest of the week so you can listen in to whatever is going on in the Glen Oaks repeater. You get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And that'll bring you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike KC2NJI has a great archive site of the Limark Technical Net. They go as far back as September of 2006. So if you have a chance, avail yourself of it. It's amateurradio.tv. It's been seen by over a million visitors. You know, make it a million and one. So those are the links. Let me drop, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, we have the usual business, questions, comments, topics. Hopefully the first few will be amateur radio related, but I'm open to discuss any science or technology if you're game, so am I. Also, before that, I have a couple little things to tell people. The questions and such should take us hopefully to 10:15. Then Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report, which should take us to approximately 11 o'clock. And I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If all these electronic gizmos continue to work properly, and I do as well. With that in mind, let me drop for a second, and I will discuss a few short topics before we get to the questions and such. Okay, for those people who are interested, and I hope many of you are, the new COVID vaccinations are available. I just got mine yesterday. I'm still kind of feeling the effect, unfortunately, but better safe than sorry. So, you know, if you're in the high-risk group, please, please, please consider getting your booster. And even if you're not, if you're a cautious person, you know, get the influenza vaccine, get the COVID vaccine. Make sure that that you have a better chance of not catching any of these viruses during the coming winter weather and such. So, you know, you can get it at your doctor's office. You can get it at drugstores. If you have any kind of insurance, they cover it, so please consider doing that. Number two, for those interested in my story from last week, when someone stole my phone number, I found out that it's called getting your phone number slammed. And it was very popular back in the 90s when Secondary phone companies were offering long-distance services. You could, you know, still have your phone with one company, but you could pay long distance at a sometimes discounted fee. And a lot of times people made a couple of bucks by stealing your number and giving it to those third-party long distance. This particular attack was not due to long-distance fees and such. Although Verizon, which is the phone company I use, incorrectly surmised that it was probably a typographical error. Someone was entering someone else's phone number into a transfer routine and miskeyed it. I found out a few days later that it was a identity attack. Because and one done by someone who has a very low work ethic, apparently, which I'm very happy for. So they stole my number Thursday morning. Monday afternoon, all of a sudden, I get an alert that someone's trying to break into my my Fidelity account. And 5-10 minutes later, I get what's called a subscription mail bomb for 2 hours, a stream of scripted subscriptions to email mailing lists all over the place. The idea of the mail bomb usually is to distract you from when they break into the important things, so that the important things email is between hundreds, if not thousands. Hundreds, if not thousands, of specious email messages. But this guy first broke into my, tried to break into my account, and then after he tried to break into my account, that's when the bomb went off. So the bomb was kind of useless, except it was just annoying to me. So I got on Fidelity and made sure that everything was real tight, and I got my phone number back a few days ago. So this was an identity attack and a subscription mail bomb. In case you've never had them, you're very fortunate. Any comments, feel free.
KD2OGB Mobile.
Big CN, no radio, ham radio related.
Okay, I was actually asking if people had any comments of what I said. I'll put you on the list, Wesley. Craig, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I'm going to make this quick because I don't want my stuff to melt here. Just pulling into my driveway. Your number got stolen, huh? I would assume you probably don't have that number lock feature, depending on what carrier you have. I have Verizon, and I have number lock turned on my phone, which prevents unauthorized port outs of my number. And that's actually the new scam going on. They try to get info from you from the dark web and then convince the carrier to port your number to their SIM card, making you lose service, and then any two-factor authorizations get compromised because now the text messages go to them, which is why you really want to set the email. That's pretty huge for your number to get taken like that.
Yeah. Fortunately, as far as I can figure out, and I even did a credit run just to make sure that they didn't take out any new credit cards or do any other little weird things. And it was just basically my Fidelity account that they were really looking for. Strangely enough, Verizon really didn't offer that. I have to talk to some people, you know, this Monday about locking it. So, and also my cell phone, which fortunately they didn't know about and they didn't steal, which would have been much more problematic for me personally. So, yeah, I'm going to have to lock my numbers from now on.
Applies to mobile numbers, but on your Verizon account, like on the app on the phone, if you log in and go to manage device, it gives you a whole bunch of things. Disconnect or reconnect service, number lock, number transfer pin. That's something I have, but it only lasts for 7 days at a time. You have your SIM pin, which I have enabled on my phone, and the pin unblocking key if you can't get your SIM card unlocked and things like that. gives you all kinds of different things. But yeah, number lock is what will prevent scammers from trying to port out your number. Because the carrier, first off, if the carrier does try to access your account, your phone is going to say, someone's trying to access your account, is this you? The logic choice would be to say no, and then maybe change your password, and then call them to see who's trying to port your number over. So that's definitely the big thing. I'll actually join back on this topic in a couple of minutes on an HT. Let me go deliver my merchandise here. KD2O Juby Mobile.
Okay, Craig. Once again, this is AC2GS. This is the Limemark Technical Net. We have you down, Wesley. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
WB2BXO here.
Yeah, hello, Frank. How are you doing today?
With Wesley, which should take about an hour. If I'm still here, I guess we can talk about 10 meters a bit. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm sure Wesley wouldn't mind if we talk about 10 meters first, because, you know, like I said, I'd like to kind of keep the beginning of it, at least amateur radio related. And I think Craig plans to be coming back after he delivers his ice cream. So if you want to talk about 10 meters, that would be fine.
Actually, I don't have much. I have only one subject, but that would be up to everybody.
Okay, so Wesley, you want to go first?
No. Take the ham radio first, then you take me.
Okay. So Frank, we had the 10 meter net as per usual. 10 meters was nice and open. I spoke with a regular here on the technical net and the repeater, Ken, VHC, N2VHC. And spoke to a bunch of local people. And I spoke to that gentleman in Namibia. He's in the, I think a year ago, I talked to him a few times around 1 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time. So, you know, like a clock, right after 1 o'clock, he was on, you know, transmitting from Namibia. I think his name is Mike. So I spoke to him. So we had very good propagation. There was a lot of activity on the band. There had to be at least 14, 15 conversations going on simultaneously in the pan adapter area that I was looking at. Not too many takers. A lot of people kind of stayed on their own frequency and didn't slide around looking for other people, but, you know, that's okay. But 10 meters is what I was hoping it would be this spring and summer. So the fall brought the magic back.
I'm back, Roy, KD2OGB.
Okay, Craig, we're talking to Frank right now. When I finish with Frank, I'll get back to you.
Time.
Yeah, okay, very good. Yeah, I did hear, I was on 10 meters briefly calling PX0 Fox Fox and Fernando de Noronha, but his pileup was spread out across about 5 KCs, and he was working a gray line path to Europe, so I didn't work him. I'll probably try again during the week. Actually, I may not have that much time during the week this week. I usually do since I'm retired. I've got a bunch of, I signed up for professional, to zoom into a professional conference Tuesday and Wednesday just to kind of keep up with what's going on. And my niece is, from Sacramento on Thursday, so I might not have time to get on during the week when a lot of other people aren't on. Yeah, buddy of mine in Concord, California, in the Bay Area, with 100 watts to, I think, either a buddy pole or a miracle whip, I forget which one he's using, with very precisely cut radials. worked Belgium and France at their gray line this morning. So evidently propagation was quite good, though I read, according to Pat Cook's propagation report, he indicated that in the week before the equinox, propagation was not as good as he had expected it to be. But, yeah, it is good. It does seem to be picking up. And let's see, my friend Steve worked Norfolk Island yesterday in the Oceanic contest, which is an overwater pass for him, but still, that's a nice one. If you look at the map, Norfolk Island is in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, so, yeah, conditions do, do seem to be improving as predicted, but, I think some of the gurus expected it to, expect it even better. But whatever it is, I'll take it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I forgot to mention we had a VE7, so we had a Canada station, and that's very rare. For some odd reason, we don't get the good propagation towards the north. I've mentioned it before that the Queens Nassau County line seems to be the cutoff. We make contact when propagation conditions are decent to the Midwest, to the south, to the southwest, to the south, to the west coast, but I think this is the first time I've reached Canada on 10 meters. So it was a good net this time. I'm looking forward to future weeks. You know, I see no particular reason why the propagation should kind of discontinue itself anytime soon. We're still up there in the peak sunspot activity. Just whatever it was that was discombobulating F1 and F2 has left us for the time being, which is a pleasure.
WA2DSM with a question.
Yes, Stu?
Yes, good evening, Roy and others. Are you using your regular rig that you use to access the computer?
Usually I am using All-Star. My All-Star connection doesn't seem to be working, and I didn't really have time to reboot everything. So this is a real live RF connection for a change.
Okay, you're a great deal of noise. That's the only reason why I ask. Usually you're just dead for quieting.
Yeah, because unfortunately, Limark's repeater is not really optimized for the end of Brooklyn. So sometimes the signal is decent and sometimes it's noisy, and that's why I took to a direct connection using All-Star, where I didn't have to worry about antennas or RF. But because it was distorting and I couldn't get any signal back, other than rebooting the computer, this is my best way of talking. Unfortunately, people will have to just tolerate the noisy signal for tonight, and next week I should be back on All-Star. You're welcome. I would prefer a better signal, but, you know, maybe someday Limark will put up a link in Brooklyn, and then things will be much easier to get there. Anyway, Frank, sounds like you're having loads of fun, too. So, you know, we just keep our fingers crossed and hope this continues for you know, the next few months. Who knows, maybe even a year. I'm kind of dubious. I think, unfortunately, when spring and summer come, we're going to have something similar to this spring and summer, because we had something similar last spring and summer. But we'll see. You know, like the weather. Whatever it is, I'll take it.
Sounds terrific. Very good. Okay, it's a pleasure to hear your voice again, Roy. I'll let you continue. In regards to all, we'll be listening. WATDFM.
Okay, very good. Frank, are you still out there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I sure am.
Yeah, look at the map. VE7, depending on where he is not really all that far north. So most of VE7 activity, I think, is right near the border with Washington. Vancouver, just north of Puget Sound, which I think is around 50 degrees latitude or thereabouts. Somebody can, I'm not looking at a map right now. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. And they also have the advantage of obviously being near the water. So I don't know if it's really an indication so much of having propagation to the north. It's interesting. At least you had some solid transcontinental propagation. Go ahead.
Yeah, like I said, I'll take what I can get. And, I mean, it might be more to the west than it is to the north, but, you know, I mean, I can't get Nassau County. You know, it gets up to about the edge of Queens. I talk to people in Queens, but except for one guy one time on some beach there in Long Island, I don't think I've made any contact past the Queens Nassau County line. So I'll accept VE7 as somewhat north for the sake of just having felt that I accomplished something.
Yeah, well, that is good. I remember years ago, I was operating a contest station in the Rockaways. Back in the 70s, back before all the antenna pointing was automated, and I pointed the antenna to the east to work the Europeans, and one of the guys walks over and moves the antenna more to the north. He's like, "You're pointing at Africa, not Europe," you know, which of course is correct, because the Great Circle Path for much of Europe is actually pointing more toward the north, and we often forget about that. If you want to work Asia from this part of the country, working Vietnam, let's say, is actually due north. That's exactly halfway around the world, and you work those guys over the pole. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I usually don't end up working long path, but, you know, I'm happy for the short path. I'll take anything that I can get, especially, there have been months where I've been lucky. I call a DX New Jersey.
Yeah, well, that's one of the fun things about amateur radio. You do the fun things you want. I'm probably too one-dimensional. I spend much of my time on HF chasing what used to be called DXCC countries, and I still call them that because I'm an old-timer. And I was very annoyed the other day, by the way, when I submitted an application for my last DXCC award for 12 meters, which I don't have an official award for yet. I put it in, and it wasn't processed. I just kept getting, the message sent. And I'm like, okay, did I make a mistake on the form again? As I occasionally, as I've done a couple of times. So I emailed them, and they said, "We can't process awards right now. Our system is still down because of the hack." So for those who are applying for, want to apply for ARRL awards, don't bother right now. WB2BS.
AC2GS. Yeah, pretty much everything is screwed up. I know a guy who took and passed his VE exams, and they told him that we can't process your VE exams until we fix our computers. So just about any certificate that you want from the ARRL, you know, lots of luck. Take your time, because they're fixing their computers at the speed of molasses.
Yeah. more like what they call in some businesses, the glacial speed of government. Since I guess some regulators may actually be involved in that case. But, you know, it seems like, wait a minute, didn't their insurance company pay $1 million to the hackers to get their system back, and they still don't have their system back? What gives?
I tend to think that they're using this as an opportunity to update their MS-DOS system, which is, archaic. I don't know for a fact. I don't know any of the details, but I would think just bringing stuff back online, unless something terrible happened, wouldn't take this long. I think they just decided that having software written in the late 20th century is a little too archaic, and so getting someone to write software and debug it all, that could introduce a great deal of delay into the process.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know the LOTW system, I remember hearing a couple of years ago on one of the virtual conferences, they said that they were looking into an LOTW replacement long before the world for the uninitiated. LOTW, I think, is over 25 years old now, and I don't think it's been updated. It is still essentially, I think you're right, it is still essentially an MS-DOS-based system, which is just a little bit obsolete at this point. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, what can I tell you? I mean, there's loads of people using Windows WP. All the stuff from 20 years ago plus. The old adage, if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. There's a lot of people who have archaic equipment plugged in through an RS-232 interface that's on the motherboard, not the daughter board. So I'm sure there's a lot of people doing things like that. I think Japan just passed a law making it illegal to have anything in business that uses floppy drives anymore.
That's interesting. Well, kind of different culture there. I guess they can get away with doing things we probably can't do here. I guess they can do that kind of thing here. I don't think our regulators would get away with doing that, regardless of what party is in charge. And one more thought. Technical, not strictly speaking amateur radio question. Curious whether anybody here has played with the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses. It seems like a kind of clever toy, and I don't see all that well these days. It sounds like something that might be useful if it actually works. So far, some of the feedback I've gotten in the videos I've seen is that it actually does. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't have any experience with the Ray-Ban. I'll ask the people listening. I'd be willing to bet that chances are few and slim. All it really is, as far as I understand, is some built-in cameras that will interface with your cell phone, and you can run apps to do interesting things with the cell phone. Meta, that used to be Facebook, has a prototype, a much more sophisticated pair of glasses that have on-screen projection, and those are the ones that you will do face identification and object identification and give you information on the screen. There's a couple of college kids who apparently have hacked together something that hacks into some face recognition servers, and it'll kind of tell you the person's name, his address, his phone number, anything that the internet has on him will be printed out on, I don't know if it has a display on it or if it goes to a cell phone app, but the days of privacy are long, long gone. I assume that Meta or someone else will finesse this thing and make it even smaller than it is. It looks like a blocky, ugly pair of black glasses at this point, but most likely, you know, they use waveguides and all kinds of micro LED displays, so as time goes on, they'll probably not be noticeable. They'll just look like regular glasses, but brave new world we're coming to.
I've seen technology like that a couple of years ago for $10,000 or $6,000. Last one somebody wanted to sell me was like $3,000. No, I think it was $6,000. And I said, you know, that's, forget it, it's ridiculous. And I see it's for $300, which seems to do, anyway, the low-end version for $299. I'm like, looks like it does some of the same things as these very expensive toys, and, you know, maybe it's worth playing with. Anyway, I'm sure if somebody on here's played with it, they'll jump in here. Otherwise, you know, we'll move on to, I think, Wesley or whoever's next got on the list. WB2BXO, back to net control.
AC2GS. Thank you, Frank. Yeah, the Meta prototypes, they're not meant to be sold right now because I think the production costs are something like $10,000 because they use waveguides that have to be pretty much handmade, and the failure rate is rather high, so they have to run through a bunch of waveguides, and they have to be apparently perfect in order to do what these people need them to do. So, you know, the waveguide alone, I think, costs about $7,000-$8,000, and then you have the rest of the electronics and the cobbled-together software. Anyone out there had any opportunity to play with the Ray-Ban camera sunglasses? Please hit push to talk and tell us what you found. Okay, Frank, I'm sorry to tell you that no one apparently has any experience. There are also other, there's a display, I don't remember what it's called, for about, I think it's $400 or $500, that kind of projects the image of a computer screen in your field of view. I'll have to look that up. Maybe I'll put it on my link page, but that's another option. You know, a lot of people are kind of trying to come up with something. It's sort of reminiscent of about 3-4 years before the iPad came into being, where everyone tried to make it work, and it was either too funky or too expensive, or the features just didn't amount to enough to rationalize the cost of the item. So I think eventually we'll have things like that. I remember Futurama did a takeoff on Apple, and they had the iPhone, but it was spelled EYE, and it was a eyeball insert, and the screen kind of back projected to your retina.
Even if the technology did exist. that's amusing. But some of the technology that's coming online is kind of off the hook, as some people say.
Yeah, it was a particularly good episode of Futurama. The major character is on a long, 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 long line of something that might be Apple in the future. And he finally gets frustrated and he just grabs money and throws it at the salesperson and says, "Take my money."
I can certainly envision people doing that in an Apple store. Except those are the people who would probably send them crypto.
Yeah, I don't know. It takes all kinds. I mean, I haven't fully fallen for Apple. You know, my computers are Windows. I bought an iPhone years ago, and I bought an iPad. I like how they work, and I just keep on throwing money at Apple for the occasional update and upgrade. I haven't seen anything I liked recently, so I'm saving my money. Eventually, they're putting IA chips into these things, and they're going to slowly bring on services that utilize the artificial intelligence. So I'm waiting to see what exactly they bring us before I'm going to invest any more money for the time being.
Apple is offering it for a trade-in. They say for free. I called them. It's not quite for free, but it's close enough that I wouldn't say their advertising is unnecessarily defective, deceptive. Anyway, yeah, they're trying to get everyone to take the iPhone 16s, the AI-capable iPhone 16s, at very little cost to get an installed base of them. My wife's iPhone, the battery seems to last about 10 minutes at a time now, so she wants to go get a new one this week, but I think we're going to get probably get one of the last 15s, the first 16, just like the first 15, probably melt in your hand or something. I don't want to pay for user debugging.
Yeah, you don't want to be a beta tester for free. I understand entirely. These days, I've just gotten into the habit when my battery starts to fail me. Although my batteries, when they fail catastrophically. I get them to inflate. I guess I just leave them too long on the charging station. But I've swapped out enough batteries myself that it's not a technical problem. I just order another battery from iFixit and just swap them out, and they're usually good for another year or two. Occasionally, just the motherboard just dies, and there's nothing much I can do about it except buy a new one. That happened with my 13. It just gave up the ghost. It just wouldn't start up, battery or no battery. So, I don't know. Maybe next year. Most likely the artificial intelligence chips will be more powerful next year anyway. And they haven't really included any AI stuff into the operating system yet. That's something that's going to roll out through the year. So I figure I'll just wait and watch.
I talk to people who swear by the quality of AI-produced content, I find whenever I have an AI produce content for me, I have to rewrite it. In technical term, it sucks. I'm not that impressed yet, and I'm not sure why some people are. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've played around with ChatGPT a lot, and so I don't know if it's in my imagination. I have an idea when I'm reading AI stuff, and these days especially, it's very repulsive to me. If I run a YouTube video, and I can sense by the cadences being ever so slightly off, and a couple of occasional words that almost everyone pronounces right, but this thing is pronouncing wrong, that it's an AI piece of garbage. And I just quit it and tell my algorithm not to show me that site anymore. Because there's a lot of people generating a lot of AI slop all over the place. Their Amazon has a lot of books on Kindle that are AI nonsense. There's a lot of imagery that's AI nonsense, and there's a lot of voiceover work on YouTube that's AI. It's and I don't know if whatever it is, it reminds me vaguely of. There are people with hearing impediments, and they listen to digital voice on the radio, it just kind of hurts their ears. So when I see AI these days, it kind of hurts my eyeballs. So I don't know if I'm oversensitive or if I'm imagining these things, but I can kind of sniff them out a lot of times, and they leave a very bad taste in my mouth. So I try and stay away from AI if I can possibly. There's a lot of it as thumbnails on YouTube that annoy the heck out of me.
Yeah, I'll see what happened. I downloaded some data from the Department of Labor I said, okay, we'll go analyze this and see if I get anything interesting to put on my blog. I said, wait a minute, let me see what ChatGPT, I'm getting tongue-tied here, maybe having some fun with it, can do with this. So I sent this to ChatGPT, and it came up with this bizarre analysis of the data. I mean, technically it was right, but it was an emphasizing things that really made, like, no sense, like the importance of certain kinds of agricultural organizations, and I'm like, this has no relevance in the real world. Forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the many problems. This generative algorithm that they've been using for all of these programs just kind of to figure what's the best word to follow the previous word. And occasionally it'll just hallucinate and make stuff up. But a lot of times it emphasizes the wrong things because, again, it's not a human being. It just has a long list of linked words. And a speedy way of picking the next word out. So, a cursory view of it looks okay, but the more you kind of read it and reread it, the more you kind of think that there's something off on this. At least I do these days. So I tend to be, a little bit more sensitive than some people are to just generic pitter-patter and small talk, because that's what it's good at. It's good at small talk. And, throwing some facts in, but it also has a tendency to use phrases that are somewhat uncommon. I read a paper in a journal that they had a piece of software to give a index of whether this is a legitimately human written article or whether it's an AI article. And one of the many, many things that they factored into it is the use of the word delve. They felt that the delve is not really a word that's used a lot by human beings on the internet, but it's used by AI all the time.
Yeah, of course, you're submitting a paper to a journal, and either getting your doctorate or getting tenure or whatever depends on it, and the AI says this. Insists that this paper, was created by an AI and not you, and it's wrong, you have a serious problem.
Well, AC2GS, by the way, unfortunately, there's way too much of that going on right now. There's a lot of publish or perish, and there's a lot of people making up stuff, and it happens even in Harvard. Just recently, there was a rather famous professor who basically had her career undone by finding out that a lot of her papers were not on the up and up. She kind of made them up. I don't think they thought that she was running it through ChatGPT. She was just running it through her own imagination.
Well, no, I mean, you probably know more about that list than I do, but I don't know how she got papers like that through referee journals. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a certain degree of taking people at their word. If you say that you did a study of 500 people and you found such and such information and you plugged it into statistical analysis and got such and such results, they'll take it truthfully. They won't say, we need to have the raw data. So that's what unfortunately has been going on for decades, occasionally among some of the more famous researchers, where they play with the data. In some cases, there was a guy who was a chemist who there was a SCADA data graft, and it was used repeatedly, the same organization of SCATA for different subjects using supposedly different exams, different tests, and yet the graph that was submitted to the different articles could line up point for point. So you knew that he was just making stuff up.
Limart TechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
Yeah, and it's, you know, statistics and analytics, as they call it today, you know, it's probably pretty easy to pick out. I know when I was with the federal government years ago with the GAO, which is actually part of Congress, we had stuff refereed, or as we called it, referenced internally, and the referees did look at our raw data. They didn't just take our word for it, but they did test the raw data. And yeah, I guess the referee journals, which are, you know, external peer review, I guess don't quite work that way, as I understand it. You check the literature, but not necessarily raw data set. And it's probably not really all that hard to do these days. And in certain fields, I think researchers are expected to put their data set in the public domain after a certain amount of time. So it does get checked, even if it doesn't get checked before it's published. If I'm wrong on that, let me know. But, you know, I think I've seen that in a couple of places. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 100% that way, especially if you have a certain reputation. It's far less likely. The people that review for journal articles, I get the sense, are kind of overworked and underpaid, and so I don't know if they go as rigorously into an article. I think for the most part their job is thought to be whether this is a legitimate, sounds legitimate, reads legitimate, and, you know, not that, you know, it's kind of assumed that everyone is making up their data all the time. So I don't know exactly how much of the raw data is generally requested. If that's the case, that's a lot of extra work. There are a lot of journals out there, and they're growing in size and number every day, it seems.
Yeah, and I guess there's a certain assumption, as I understand it, researchers pay to get their pay out of their grant and contract funding, I suppose, to get their stuff published in the journals. And I guess there's a certain assumption that you're not going to pay to have it published unless it's legit.
Well, there are really, ultimately, there are two types of journals. There are journals where you submit the article. If they find it okay, they'll publish it without charging you anything. And then there is, unfortunately, questionable second-tier journals that requires, you know, service fees and such. So it's almost like a self-publishing house, which constrains the guidelines, I'm sure, of the people examining the articles. You know, if you're willing to give the publisher $1,000 and it just, you know, it isn't ludicrous, although there have been ludicrous articles written, there was one particular article where someone drew a picture of a rat with private parts about 10 times bigger than they usually are, and it got all the way to publication before anyone noticed. I don't think so. And, you know, I mean, there are other articles, other journals. You know, that's more of a popular journal than just a, you know, a famous high-rank one. You know, there's New England Journal of Medicine. There's a lot of other specialty journals that none of us hear about because they're read by people in that particular field, but they have high esteem. You know, they have Nobel laureates who've written articles for them and such. So, no, they don't charge anything as far as I'm aware. It's the kind of the seedier secondary level where, you know, these guys are desperate to be published because they want tenure. And that's, you know, some institutions just kind of count up the number of articles you've written. They particularly like if other people cite your article. So that's another semi-scam where questionable articles can cite other questionable articles just to kind of gin up their ratings.
I know it's a crazy business. Well, you know, every business is crazy in its own way, but that is interesting. The only person I know right now who's working on tenure is a friend's daughter, who's a scholar of Middle Eastern languages and literature, and I don't think she'll have any trouble because she has a skill set that I think like only 5 people in the world have. So they're not going to be able to find anybody else.
Well, that's a good place to be. You know, tenure is kind of the you know, looking for the big prize. You know, for the goose that laid the golden eggs. Not everyone attains tenure, and you know, and it's very difficult once you gain tenure to have it stripped from you. You have to really break some big laws, some big rules, and such. So. All these assistant professors who aren't yet tenured are willing to sell their firstborn for tenure.
Yeah, well, she and her husband have a couple of kids, and I assure you, they're not selling them. But, yeah, I've heard, not a business side I'm in, but, you know, I've heard some nutty stories over the years.
Yeah, academia can be a real tough place. I mean, a lot of people kind of looking from outside looking in, it seems like, you know, a piece of cake. You know, you get to take summer off, you get to take this off, and once you get to tenure, you pretty much can't get fired. But, you know, getting to that position, that's the problem. And also, there are different criterias. I had a few professors, fortunately, at NYU who left places like Harvard because they had aged out at the time. I don't know if they've changed the rules, but in Harvard, if you were, I think it was 70 or 75, you had to retire. So they would retire from Harvard, and they would move over to NYU, and I would have a Harvard professor teaching me stuff. It was fun. Actually, I missed out. I was going to get a guy who was famous for game theory. And unfortunately, he moved to NYU and got sick and took that entire season off and I was taught by a regular NYU professor game theory. But still, you know, that was before most people knew about game theory. That particular professor was always whining and complaining to us that he kept on writing letters to the NFL about how if they use game theory, they could get a better lineup than if they just pick the best person first. And they would not return his letters or his phone calls at the time. I assume they've changed their mind in the ensuing years.
Yeah, I think today they hire him because the whole attitude towards using analytics in sports has changed. So that world has changed. Yeah, I have a couple of whatever it's worth. I have a couple of NYU degrees. Who was the game theory professor, if you remember?
No, unfortunately, my memory isn't that good. That, you know, that's, 40-plus years ago? 50 years ago.
Yeah, same here. when we packed up my Brooklyn apartment a couple of weeks ago, I had all my NYU certificates and degrees packed up nicely, and my wife was like, what are you going to do with these now? You're retired. I said, oh, I worked very hard for them. I'm going to put them up at the other house, whatever it's worth. And I can put them up. I don't have to worry about carting them downtown to show some potential employer or anything. I'm not, you know, I can put them on the wall and not have to worry about taking them down.
Yeah, I'd be proud of them. I have a lot of sheepskin, and I'm proud of it. I worked hard for it, and I deserved it. And I don't think I don't have it on any walls right now. It's kind of in a drawer. Waiting to kind of figure out some kind of empty space to put it in.
Yeah. I said I told Fanny I want to put up all my DXCC certificates. What do those mean? Well, okay, I'll put them up in the ham shack, behind the computer. They mean something to me. Took me 50 years to get them all. That's why I'm annoyed with the league for not being able to give me my issue my 12-meter one. Because what am I going to do if I'm going to put them up in order for 80 to 10 meters? I'm going to leave a gap for the 12-meter certificate when the league finally fixes their computer in about 3 years and sends it to me.
Well, you could mount them on those pasted 3M Velcro tabs, so you can put them in the present order, and when they finally release your other certificate, you just rearrange them a little bit.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I can get Velcro things that'll stick on the wall, and then stick the picture frame to the I guess they're essentially picture frames, the certificate frames to the Velcro.
Yeah, 3M sells a whole range of these things. They use a special adhesive that if you apply pressure at a 90-degree angle, they kind of deglue themselves so they don't leave a mark and they won't chip your paint. I've used them for a lot of things. You just have to get the right size. You know, they give you different sizes for different weight capacities.
You remember what they're called? I'll search on those. And that may be a better idea than sticking hooks in the wall for all my certificates and stuff. But go ahead.
AC2GS. Yeah, they're called 3M Command. Just kind of type it into Amazon, and they have a laundry list of sizes.
Yeah, that may work. You know, I'll look at that with Franny and see if she feels that, you know, that's a good idea. Yeah, another certificate, one of the things I retrieved from my parents' apartment when they passed was my dad's first-class radio telegraph license. And I was going to post that on my website and, you know, maybe